श्री पंचतत्व भगवान की श्री श्री राधा माधव की श्री श्री प्रहलाद नरसिंह देव की श्री मयपुराम की श्री सद्गोस्वामी प्री की श्री ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भगवत महापुराण की समवेत भक्तवृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल ओ ग्लोरीज टू द सम ऑफ द बूटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द सम ऑफ द बूटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द सम ऑफ द बूटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग ग्लोरीज टू श्री प्रभुपाद मा ओम विष्णु पराय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्ति वीरांति स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी पिचाणी निर्विशेष शून्यवारी पश्चात श्री सतरणी सो थैंक यू ऑल फॉर कमिंग Sorry I was late, I misplaced something, I was looking for it. His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj is actually still in Mayapur. Unfortunately, he had an accident yesterday morning, not so serious, but enough that he sort of knocked his life airs out of place, and head was spinning when I saw him yesterday. So he won't be coming, even though he's here, and he's leaving for Ujjain tomorrow. I don't know what time. But we met and we discussed about the future progress of this class. So, as you may recall, I had said that before we break, on the day before Nisringa Chaturdasi, our last day, I propose that we have you write an essay, but that's so complicated. So I thought that I would just present what Maharaj and I discussed. And since now all of you are quite confident in presenting your views in the public eye, without any reservation whatsoever, so you can just get some verbal feedback, you can tell us what you think. So we've kind of, in the development of this class, in trying to keep the attention of our very worthy body of students, keep you interested, because as we've said, interest is everything. So we sort of went, in the beginning, the pendulum swung to the way of us moving very quickly through the material, giving a lot of tattva, which is sort of unavoidable in the beginning of Bhagavatam, because it is very tattvic, not very lilic in its first part, at least the first part of the first canto. And so then the feedback was, well, you're moving a bit too fast and bringing in so much material, it's hard to keep up. So then we sort of swung the pendulum over to the other side. A lot of class participation, but the effect was, in Maharaj's opinion, that particularly in Chapter 11, we sort of got so many presentations and that he said, even I have lost the thread of the story, the narrative in chapter 11. So we want to try to come to a balance now. And so, of course, this is really going to be coming into effect when we meet again after the break. But our proposal is, what I want to propose to you, that Maharaj and I will, and when we come to any new chapter, then Maharaj and I will go through the material as we do and discuss between ourselves and with you the study of the chapter itself, and make sure that intellectually speaking it's clear. And then presentations. Now that you are experienced in giving presentations, and now that we have established group leaders who are willing to take up, as Prabhupada said
In his prayer to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the mace, the gada, the controlling stick, the danda, and organized committees. So each chapter we will have simply one presentation. And how that will be done is going to be left entirely up to you. But there must be one presentation. So in other words, as a class, as a whole, you can decide whether you would like one person among you to make a presentation, or you'd like to form a panel in a small group, make a group presentation, or something else. And in addition to that, when it is appropriate, when the chapter has some nice leela, then in addition to that, our Srimad Bhagwat players, of course the players are not here now, they're in a Jain, will put on a play too, which of course is very exciting for everyone. So these two, depending on the nature of the chapter, both things may happen. At least we expect from our adult students one presentation. But the thing is that you'll all get credit. All enrolled students will get credit in taking part in the planning of the presentation. In other words, you should at least meet and decide what's the best way to do this. And if you all decide, well, Shantiparayan Prabhu should speak. But then Shantiparayan Prabhu, he may say, well, you should help me. You research this, you research this, you could distribute some backup assignments like that. In this way, everyone still remains involved, but we don't lose time and lose focus. I mean, your presentations were very nice, and I think this was a necessary stage we had. It's not like we're talking about, oh, we made a mistake, now we have to correct it. But since the class, just like rasa, moves kutila like a snake, so this was a necessary twist and turn on our path, that we had to reach out to you and bring you forward, get you involved. And we hope now that you have confidence. And as much as possible, we want to turn responsibility for this over to you. So Maharaj and I can just do our thing, and you can do your thing. And we'll all be happy hearing and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the whole point. To find happiness, bliss that rises us out of our materialistic obsessions, which, as Srila Prabhupada says, in this material world, the tiger of nations is always one step behind us. You see, this is our position as jivas. It's if we're moving through life with a tiger just one step behind us, you see. And if we stop, the tigers immediately, you know, they always bite on the head, the back of the head, and kill you instantly. That's why in the Sundarbans, the jungle where there's still Bengal tigers, the woodchoppers, they wear masks on the back of their head. So it looks like a face, and the tiger doesn't know then anymore which way to attack, because there's a face on both sides. So anyway, yes, we want to develop that also. Such an understanding of Krishna, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Sarvat Shamayi Pashati, that we see Krishna everywhere, front side, back side, and the tiger of nations won't attack us. And that is true happiness, even in this dark material world. So, that's what we discussed in a nutshell. So what do you think? Come on, everybody. Let's have some feedback. Let's not be shy. Let's show that you're all enthusiastic participants. What do you think? Is this a good idea? We'll continue to with the essays. I'm not going to give you an essay at the end of this period. It's pointless because it's such a break. But we will also continue with the essays as before. That will become more necessary now, since presentation. Not all of you will be participating in that, so we'll go back to seeing looking at your individual understanding by what you write, but still only one page as is over the weekend, not so much. So what do you think? Yes?
So, think it's great?
I think it's great.
Really wanted to hear you more, your realizations. Okay. I think it would be nice to have some opportunity for questions.
Yes. Honestly speaking, Maharaj and I didn't discuss that, but I was thinking about that too. So I think if we move at a more speedier pace, which we will this way, then we will be able to reserve at least one class period for questions. But I would really prefer that the questions be submitted in writing. This is just much more... I mean, you're all very nice. We've kind of smoothed out our group a little bit. You know, we're much more on the same wavelength. But in India... and also, in Eastern Europe, too, Eastern European countries, this is sort of more the finer way of presenting questions, that you write them down. And so I'd prefer that than just choosing among hands, because, you see, questions we can save. Even we don't cover them all in one period, we can put them into a file, and the next time there's a question day, if we don't get as many questions handed in, we can go back to old questions. Eventually, they'll all be answered, you see. But if it's hands up and we only have time to pick certain, then some people are not going to get their questions answered. So I think there's more chance of everyone's questions getting answered if you turn them in on paper. So I'd like to continue with that. And it's also faster, much faster, because you don't have to ask the question. We just read it, and you've written it in very clear language, so we don't have to ask you, what do you mean, what are you trying to say? So hopefully you write it in clear enough language where we won't have to try to figure out what's being asked. I think it's just better. Yeah, so if we move at a quicker pace, say the medium pace, this is the middle path, the Madhyama Panta now. And I think this will be our module or way of doing this class from now on. So, anyone else have anything to say? Yes?
Will there be an hour set aside as a class for the student body presentation? Is that the idea?
Yes. If you need it. I want to leave that open. We can give you up to an hour, you see. I hope it will be an hour. And you see, another thing, back to questions and answers, you know, you can take advantage of that presentation. Yes, that was also in the back of my mind. And now your question just brought it forward. Returning to his point, is that you can arrange your presentation in such a way that it will also include questions to us. You see, you can do that. Yeah, we involve you in our discussions, so why can't you involve us in your discussion? Perfect democracy, right? That's what everyone wants today, right? In ISKCON. So that's what we're trying to do. So you can build that into your presentation. That some questions somehow or other you ask of us, or you want our feedback, you want some discussion with us. So that can be part, and that will certainly fill an hour. Even if your presentation is only 10 minutes itself, we can still use up the whole hour in discussion afterwards as part of the presentation, if that's what you say you want to do. It's fine. Yes?
When we were doing our group presentation, we planned like that, because you were going to ask questions, so we were thinking somebody should research what could the possible questions be.
Yes.
And that keeps back on that strong focus of the body times.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, in the beginning, I was taking the initiative to get you used to doing things, mm-hmm. And now we want you just to do them on your own. And, in this way, then Maharaj and I can do what we really like to do, because neither one of us really likes to manage anything. we're both. It is said that of the political systems, you know, the Shudras are attracted to communism, the Vaishyas are attracted to capitalism, the Kshatriyas are attracted to monarchy or dictatorship or fascism, and the Brahmanas are attracted to anarchy. So, and I'm an old-time anarchist. You should have seen the things I was up to when I was in university. So, yes, we just like things to move in their own way, but there has to be some common, common ground, understanding, purpose, and training too. So we hope we've accomplished that. Yes.
I was going to say, I kind of have a worry that individual, the room for individual expression will be left out.
Less.
Will be left out. If as a body we're supposed to get together and do something. Maybe different people will be involved in that, but again, I kind of feel that there might be an individual element that's
well, we have to find a balance within the balance. We're saying this is the middle path, but even in any path, you can walk on the left side, the right side, or exactly in the middle. So even there, it's a constant. Yes, let me remove any impression that I've made that, okay, this is it, and we'll rigidly follow this. But we're narrowing the parameters. So, again, one outlet for individual expression is the essay. And there are definitely persons in this class who prefer simply to express themselves that way. Maharaj, who's a very good, analyst of mentality, so he says, like Madhaji's women, they feel more comfortable when they can write their thoughts than if they're asked to. Some like to speak, obviously, but he says in general, a woman would prefer to express her thoughts in writing. So, and we take these essays seriously. I read, I read every one of them, and I think about every one of them, and I mark them with comments and try to show you that, what I like and what maybe is questionable. So I'm not like Sai Baba, Sai Baba in South India, whenever he gives his darshan, because he has 50 million disciples. So they, thousands of people press forward with their letters. They have some, and he gets letters. His servants are carrying, he has letters in both hands. His servants are carrying letters behind them. And he kind of rubs he just passes his hands over all the letters. And then when he goes up to his room, there's a big garbage can. And before he enters the room, all the letters are thrown into the garbage can. So someone asked him once, you don't even read the letters of your followers. And he said, I know what they say just by touching them. Without even looking at them. So I don't do that. Don't worry. I actually read your essays and I think about them and consider them. So it's important to me because I do want your feedback. I do much, very much appreciate your realizations, and I want to continue having them. But we just have to find, at the same time, we have 12 cantos. 18,000 verses that we want to get through in some reasonable period of time. This class could possibly go on for 10 years, and that's a little bit too long. So we have to think the time factor is an important factor too. Yes?
Just was thinking about this presentation. Just one idea that everyone can make a presentation because we go on more or less quicker pace, and one devotee takes one chapter, and this way everybody would have opportunity to make presentation, and this way everybody would have opportunity to speak and get feedback also.
If that's what you all want.
They're just proposition.
Yeah. It's a proposition that he's made, you've all heard it, but that's your decision. That's not I don't want to manage this. I don't want to say, yes, we're going to, like clockwork, move around. Because we, it should be coming from here, you know. Someone who comes forward to speak should speak from the heart. Not because, uh-oh, it's my turn. You know, like, who is that Rakshasa? It's in the Mahabharata. There was that Brahmin family, and when the Pandavas came to this village, they heard the Brahmin family put them up in the room in their house, and they heard them lamenting. And the family lamenting, and because there was some Rakshasa up on the hill above the village, and he demanded, I think it was once a year, that someone be sent up to eat, that he would eat from the village. Otherwise, he would come and lay waste to the whole place. So they drew lots in the village, and the lots fell on this family. There was someone from the family. There was a father, mother, brother, and sister. And it's actually a very beautiful part of the Mahabharata, because each one is volunteering themselves. The father is volunteering. And then the others are saying, Father, you cannot go, and they're crying, and the mother volunteers, and, you know, then the daughter volunteers, and the little son, the smallest son, he volunteers, because I'm the smallest, I don't do much around here anyway, so I'm the least important, and then they all start to cry, you know. And so, then Queen Kunti, she, being a mother herself, she couldn't bear to hear this, so she stepped in and she said, I'll send one of my sons. And then they were all shocked and they said, you can't, you're our guest. You know, you cannot send, no. See, one of my sons is Bhimasena. So he's going to solve your problem for you. That's one of my favorite stories in the Mahabharata, because the person was to be sent up with a bullock cart full of food. And two bullocks, and the demon would eat all of it, you see. The bullocks, all the food, and the person. You see, so Bhima, because he's vikrodara, he is hungry as a wolf. That's what the word means in Sanskrit. He has the hunger of a wolf. So he was riding up the cart, he started eating everything in the cart. And by the time it reached the lair of the demon, the cart was empty. And the demon came up. He was enraged. What? He saw Bhima still eating the rest. There was a little bit left. And he was just eating. And the demon became so furious, he just attacked Bhima. And was still while eating, Bhima was punching the demon, knocking him against the trees. Boom! Boom! And then finally, when he was finished, then he massacred the demon. Just broke him into pieces, literally. And then came back, and everyone was happy. This is one of the nicest stories of the Mahabharata. So we don't want to have a system like that here in the world. That, you know, uh-oh, today's my day to be offered. No one should feel like that. You should speak from the heart. That's very important. So that's up to you to decide. But since it's now one presentation from all of you, we would expect that among yourselves, those who are enrolled students, then you voluntarily participate. You, in some way or other, from the back, in some supportive way, even if it's only going to be one person actually speaking, you somehow contribute to his presentation. And so I expect our Uttama Shloka Prabhu, David, Shanti Parayan, who have shown themselves capable to see that something, you know, something like that happens. All right then. Anything else on this point? Everyone's... Maharaji, you're here.
Yeah, I am here.
I thought you were going to leave.
In this week I go. I don't know when.
Oh, you don't know when.
They are looking for me.
Okay. But your son's not here, so you must be feeling great separation. Yes.
That because I will leave more or less after the festival, so should I find somebody to replace me?
Oh, you're going to leave? leave so fast? I thought you stayed 6 months in Mayapur.
It's almost
over. Oh, you've been here for 6 months? Really? Time flies so fast. Okay. Yeah, if there's someone staying and you can find, that would be nice. Yeah, great. All right then. So, if there's nothing further, no? Vanara, you're still here. You didn't go. So where are you staying? At home. Oh, then I can't punish you. That's why you're staying at home. Oh, I shouldn't say this. I'll get in trouble. I punish him by... I have to explain this because now ISKCON is so sensitive about treatment of children. I punish him by... I run up to him shouting and waving my fist, but then at the last minute, when I open my fist, there's a sweet ball. Because he is a kind of a rascal. That's why I call him Vanara, which means monkey. But he's a nice monkey. Hanuman was also a Vanara. Nice to meet you. So, we were reading through the Shlokanusaranam. We had completed a summary of verses 4 through 11. Om Nuo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Nuo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Nuo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And so, after all good astronomical signs had gradually evolved in the sky, the great grandson of Pandu, this is Parikshit, as you may recall from, well, it was over the weekend, so we've read about how Parikshit was actually consumed by the fire of Brahmastra, but his body was restored by the Lord. So this, the great grandson of Pandu, Parikshit, was at last born. Greatly satisfied, Maharishi Yudhisthira performed the birth ceremonies. Learned Brahmanas, headed by Kripa and Dhaumya, expertly recited the Vedic mantras. At the conclusion of the ritualistic performances, Maharaj Yudhisthira gave abundant gold, land, villages, grains, and animals to the Brahmanas. In return, the satisfied Brahmanas informed him, "O King, this child was saved by the Lord because he is a pure devotee and the last remaining descendant of the pious King Pudu. He will be known as Vishnu Ratha as well as Parikshit, Nivesha." From Srila Prabhupada's word-for-word translation to verse 17, we learn that Vishnu Ratha means one who is protected by Lord Vishnu. In the purport to the same purport, His Divine Grace writes, "And because he is especially given protection by the Lord, the indication must be concluded that the child would be a first-grade devotee of the Lord with all good qualities." There are three grades of devotees, namely the Mahabhagat, Madhyam Adhikari, and the Kanishta Adhikari. Those who go to the temples of the Lord and offer worshipful respect to the deity without sufficient knowledge in the theological science, and therefore without any respect for the devotees of the Lord, are called materialistic devotees or Kanishta Adhikari, the third grade of devotees. Secondly, the devotees who have developed a mentality of genuine service to the Lord and who thus make friendships only with similar devotees show favor to the neophytes and avoid the atheists, are called the second grade devotees. But those who see everything in the Lord or everything of the Lord, and also see in everything an eternal relation of the Lord, so that there is nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord. And just as a comment, this is called nirapeksha. And this term nirapeksha will be discussed, is discussed between Lord Krishna and Uddhav in the 11th canto. So, the root of nirapeksha is aksha, which means the eye. You see, chakshur unmilitam jena tasmai, chakshu, akshu, aksha. So nirapeksha means one who sees nothing but Krishna everywhere. There's, in other words, wherever his eyes go, there is never no Krishna. Nirapeksha. Everything, as Prabhupada writes here, nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord. Nirapeksha. So they're called the Mahabhagavatas, or the first grade devotees of the Lord. Such first grade devotees of the Lord are perfect in all respects. A devotee who may be in any of these categories is automatically qualified by all good qualities. And thus a Mahabhagavat devotee like Maharaj Parikshit is certainly perfect in all respects. So now the qualifications of King Parikshit are being established in this chapter. This is very important. We have already been introduced somewhat to Sri Shukadeva Goswami, heard about his wonderful appearance, and I told you about his identity in answer to one question as Shuka and Sara. There's a very nice Goswami Granta Shastra, which I have in my collection. I think it's called Shuka Sara Samhita. It's a collection of their conversations. So beautiful, beautiful poetic discussion just about Sri Sri Radha and Krishna between this male and female parent. So Shukadev, we've learned, appeared in this world as Brahman realized personality. The question was, why did he do that? And the answer was, this is all by the arrangement of the Lord for our instruction, because Shukadev perfectly exemplifies the Atmarama verse, that he was Atmarama, but because in his heart of hearts, he is actually Shuka. So as soon as he heard the Bhagavatam, this awakened his identity. And he's a Shuka, he's a parrot who always speaks the glories of the Lord. So that was why he appeared, just to do that. In other words, although he had a physically perceptible form, which was also extraordinary, blue, beautiful, just like, very much like Krishna, you could just see in his physically manifest, well, what I say by physically manifest form is not necessarily, we don't take the form to be material, the form of a devotee to be material, but it is observable to us, it is perceptible to us by our physical senses. So physically manifest in that sense. His form was also very extraordinary. He was, when we read this description, it sounds so much like Krishna himself. He was 16 years old, he was blue and very beautiful to behold. But the only reason he took birth was because he was impelled by his own swarup, his own siddhadeha, his actual form in the spiritual world, to do the service for Krishna that he does eternally, as Shuka. So he just took birth to preach Srimad Bhagavatam. So we've already heard his qualification. Now we're hearing about the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. This is laying the groundwork for their sambandha, their meeting. So Maharaj, continuing the Shloka Anusaranam, Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, will this child become as great and saintly a king as the others that had appeared in this royal dynasty? The Brahmanas assured him, this child will maintain the praja, means the citizenry, even including the animals, exactly like Ikshvaku. He will be true to his promise, just like Lord Rama, the personality of Godhead, and he will be a munificent giver of charity and protector of the surrendered, like Shibi, son of Ushinara. Like Arjuna, he will be a great bowman. In 21p, purport to verse 21, Srila Prabhupada provides a detailed account of Arjuna's pastimes, which we're not going to go through here, but in your own reading, if those of you who are full enrollees, you should definitely take a good look at this purport. Parikshit's strength, Marjuda here continues, Parikshit's strength will be like that of a lion, forbearing like the earth. He will be as worthy a shelter as the Himalayas. In terms of equanimity of mind, he will be like you, my dear Yudhisthira. He will be munificent like Lord Shiva. And he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan. In magnanimity, his greatness will be like Ranti Deva's. So the story of King Ranti Deva appears near the end of Srimad Bhagavatam. Very nice story. But we won't go into that now, since it's coming, coming attraction. That's just a very brief trailer of something waiting for us in the future. In patience, he will be like Bali Maharaj, another trailer. Bali Maharaj was most patient, because he was even arrested after he surrendered everything to Vamanadeva. Then he was arrested by the associates of the Lord, Nanda, Rupananda. They bound him in ropes, and then he was even, when he bowed down his head before the Lord, I have only my head to offer you for your third step, the Lord pushed him down to Patal, and you stay there. So it seemed, you see, this satisfied all the demigods, because the demigods like to think, and the Lord likes them to think, that he's on their side. You see, Lord Vishnu is Krishna's incarnation, like he incarnates among the fish as Matsya, among the reptiles as Kurma, among the mammals as Varaha, among the man-beasts as Nrisimhadev, among the aboriginal wild savages as Parashuram. You see, so he appears throughout all forms of life, actually. So, among the demigods, the devas, he appears as Vishnu. So, the demigods like to think he's our man, but actually he is always independent. But he does want the universe to be ruled by the demigods, because the demigods are suras. You know, this Vedic aphorism, Pashanti yat suryaha, om tad vishnu paramam param saparam, Pashanti yat surya. So the suras are those who follow the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. They may not follow so closely behind, so perfectly. Their progress may, you know, like there's a shortcut you can take from here over to that area where Shishupal Prabhu lives, around the youth forum, that part. You can take through the woods. You can actually, when you go out the path, you'll see through the woods a little path. You follow that to the fields. But it's, you know, if you take that path, there's hollows in the earth. You may stumble. There's plants you may trip over. Your progress may be impeded, you see. But if you're determined, then it's a very quick way you can get over there very quickly. So Maharaj and I, that's where Maharaj goes. He always, when he disappears into the field. So the suras, the demigods, they follow Vishnu, but sometimes they stumble on their path because the Devaloka is such a place of sense gratification. Because these are the qualification for becoming a devata is piety, punya, plus sa-kam. Sa-kam means you have desires that are still desires for sense pleasure. So then one comes under the Vishnu Maya, the upper regions of the universe. That is a manifestation because it is sattvic. So it's a manifestation, that's Vishnu's own department of Maya, you see. Just like the lower regions, that's Lord Shiva's department. He has a form, Bhutta Bhavana, which is down below the earth. And that's described in the fifth canto. And there's the place Gokarna, Gokarna Linga. That's one of the famous... Gokarna is a beautiful place. I highly recommend if you just want a quiet place for study, because it's a Brahmin town. Unfortunately, they're all Shaivites. They used to be Madhva, of the Madhva Sampradaya, but they started worshipping this Shiva Linga there. And so they've gradually become Shaivites. But it's a Brahmin town. So it's a very beautiful place. It's a village, and it's, you want to see a Vedic village, Gokarna is definitely a beautiful, beautiful place. It's very simple. And anyway, a very nice place to go and study. But there it is said that Gokarna means cow's ear. And the place is shaped like a cow's ear. And Lord Shiva, he started to, he came up, the pastime is that, I've actually now forgotten the reason why he became angry. But for some reason he became very angry and started to rise up out from under the earth at that place. And then he was placated. And he was actually given a place in heaven too. So he, Lord Shiva also, he has his Kailash, Shivalok. There, in general, that region that we know as Satyalok. In ISKCON, everyone understands Satyalok to be Brahmaloka. But actually Satyaloka means Brahmaloka, Vishnuloka, Svetadvip, and also Kailash, the three together. They're the three ruling deities of the modes of nature, that is Satyalok. So one can approach the Satyalok by three ways. The devotees of Lord Shiva, who actually understand his true identity, of Vaishnava Yata Shambhu, can approach Satyalok. The Brahmanas, who actually understand who Lord Brahma is, his actual identity as Rajaguna Avatar, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they can enter Brahmalok and go back to Mahavishnu or enter Vaikuntha with him at the time of devastation. And of course, the devotees of Vishnu, like Dhruva, Dhruva was also an example of a Sakam, but he is the purest Sakam devotee. So therefore, he's also a Mahajan. Very interesting. He's one of the Mahajans, one of the great authorities in devotional service. But he's a Sakam devotee. That's why he lives in Dhruvaloka, which is an eternal Vaikuntha planet. He has position of a king. That was his desire when he started off with his austerities. And so he was given that place as his reward. So that is Svetadvip. Dhruvaloka is also the same Svetadvip where the Lord lives. And Dhruva manages the planet of Svetadvip for the Lord. The Lord is simply in his bliss on Anantashes with Goddess Lakshmi, and Dhruva Maharaj is managing. He's like the temple commander for the deity, or temple president, or whatever. GBC deputy, or whatever you want to say. And he enjoys it. Yeah, maybe some of our ISKCON people are heading for Dhruvaloka. Anyway, So, Bali Maharaj was very patient because Lord Vamanadeva was satisfying the demigods by pushing him down to Patal, which is considered, it's not actually hell, but it's considered the lower region of the universe. Patal is called, hell is Narakalok, that's the place of Yamaraj. Yamaraj has his Yamalaya, which is a beautiful place. It's actually to use a word that I don't like to use among devotees because it has many resonances that
can take the mind out of the reference of devotional service, but it's the only word I can think of in a mystical sense. The Yamalaya is non-different from the moon, which is where the Pitris go, because the Pitris, a Pitri Lok is simultaneously the moon and the nice part of Yamaraja's kingdom. So Yamaraja's, he has his the Yamalaya, the great palace, the great city of Yamaraj. And so all those who are pious karmis, that is their reward, to go there. But then the outskirts, out in the countryside outside the city, that's where the gulags are. And you know what I mean, especially those from Russia. And the Yamadutas are... So, you see, no one in this world is perfectly pious, so one who becomes Pitri goes to Pitri Loka. He's maintained there by Shraddha, by his ancestors doing Shraddha ceremonies. As long as they continue to do Shraddha generation after generation, then his piety is maintained. But when we come to Kali Yuga, all these things stop or become impotent. No one's qualified anymore. No one even knows what Shraddha ceremony really is. And they don't do it, hardly do it in India, what to speak of anywhere else. Actually, in countries where they do worship the ancestors still, like China, it's a form of ghost worship because the ancestors have become Buddhas, ghosts. Or there's a place in, there's a village in Africa. I saw a documentary about a village in Africa, a documentary film. And all their ancestors have become crocodiles. So they do a kind of puja to the crocodiles in the river. So anyway, this is in Kali Yuga. This is where ancestor worship has ended up. So then the poor Pitris, because nobody is perfectly pious, everyone has also impious reactions. It's just that the Pitris for a period of time can enjoy. You know that story about King Nriga from the Krishna book. He went before Yamaraj and he said, "So what do you want? You have so many, many pious activities. You can enjoy, I cannot even tell you how long. You have so many pious activities, but you did one bad thing. This altercation between two brahmanas and the cow that he wanted to give. So that's a very great sin." So calculating like a karmi, he thought, let me take the sinful reaction first. So then he had to take birth as a lizard who was delivered by Lord Krishna personally. So you see, this is, Yamaraj is the judge. So he's also awarding the pious activities too, but that's for the time being. Just like in the time of Tovarich Stalin, you see there were many people gathered around him who were his close friends and confidants, and later on they ended up in the Naraka part of the Soviet Union. Despite their initial friendly relation with Tovarich Stalin. So like that, everyone has to suffer and enjoy sinful pious activities. So anyway, by being pressed down to the Patala, that looked to the Devatas to be very fitting. Yes, that's that rascal, he drove us out of our kingdoms, out of our thrones. So this is very good that our man Vishnu pushes him down. But then what did Vishnu do? How does this end up? He became his doorkeeper, yes. So, you see, whether Deva or Asura, Prahlad is the... Bali is the grandson of Sri Prahlad Maharaj. So, and even the Nagas, who down there, they're giving the light, the only light down in the Bilasvarga, the under subterranean heaven, comes from jewels on the heads of the Nagas, and the Nagas are ferocious. They're celestial, but they're snakes. So that means they're very angry. They're tamasic, but they're great devotees of Lord Anantashesh. And you, if you read in the fifth canto about Lord Anantashesh, you see he's being worshipped by the Nagas. So devotees appear even as serpents, you see, or as demons, or as demigods. Or, and that's the wonderful lesson of the Bhagavatam, is that as we progress through the cantos, it's very interesting how the Bhagavatam becomes less and less, in a sense, Vedic. In the sixth canto, you meet Vritrasura, who is an out-and-out total demon. And he fights with Indra. And it's Vritrasura who goes back home, back to Godhead. And Indra has to stay and suffer the reactions. So anyway, yes, the Lord became the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj and Patal. And when Ravana came to enlist, Ravana was becoming desperate during the Lanka War. He was, when the tide was turning, he was seeing, it doesn't look like we're going to win this fight. So he started going all over the universe to enlist other asura, you know, persons known to be great asuras. I'm an asura, you're an asura, come on, we're brothers. You should come with your men and join. And do I have time? Some of you are leaving. Do I have time to tell a very wonderful story? Okay, I'll try to make this as brief as possible, because this is a very wonderful story. This is there's the Ramayana, and then there's commentary on Ramayana. So this is from a South Indian elaboration or commentary on Ramayana that... you're not leaving. No. When Ravana made this proposal to Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj said, come here, come with me. And he took him to this mountain. It was a mountain of gold. Tremendous, huge mountain. So big that you could not see the top of it. Pure gold and studded with diamonds that were as big as elephants. Solid diamonds as big as elephants. And Bali Maharaj said, Hare Krishna, he said, you see, my grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, he is devotee, I'm devotee, so I'm not getting involved in this, sorry. But to fight a war, you need money, you need wealth, you know, to equip to enlist more soldiers and equip them with good weapons. So I'll give you this mountain of gold and diamonds, but it's cash and carry, as we say in America, cash and carry. You have to take it. You take it away with you. You can have this and use it to pay for whatever you need to arrange to defend yourself from Lord Ramchandra's onslaught. And so the greedy Ravana, well, very good, all right, thank you. And he was very proud of himself, of his strength of his arm. So he put his fingers under the mountain. He was straining and straining and straining and straining. And he could not budge this mountain. He could not budge it. And he used all of his strength. And then finally he was totally exhausted. And he said, there are very few things. I even was able to move with my bodily strength Mount Kailash. There are very, very, very few things in this world that I cannot move with my mighty arms. So what is this thing that I cannot move? And Bali Maharaj looked at him and said, this was one of the earrings of my ancient predecessor in our family line, who happened to be named Hiranyakashipu. After he was killed by Lord Nrisimhadev, one of his earrings fell down here. So you can't even lift the earring of Hiranyakashipu. He was killed by Vishnu, and you think you're going to kill Vishnu? And Bali Maharaj said, therefore, time to leave. And as he left, then Lord Vamanadev, Trivikram, that's his other name, means he has the power to cross the universe in actually just two steps. So he gave Ravana a kick as he was leaving. You know, as we say, a kick in the ass. And knocked him across the universe. So he bumped into the, you know, the innermost covering of the universe. He slammed into it and fell on his back. Totally. Head spinning. Get out of here! So that's a very beautiful pastime. Alright, so on that note, we should stop. We will continue. Yes, the patience of Bali Maharaj. That Bali Maharaj endured all this knowing very well that this the Lord was just showing to the demigods to reassure them. But actually, he had surrendered to the Lord and he knew very well that the Lord is going to take care of me. So we will continue from that point, patience of Bali Maharaj. And the next comparison is to Prahlad Maharaj. So tomorrow we'll continue that. And so, unfortunately, we have to end. I thank you very much for attending again. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai! So...